Jema. So we are with Notes on the Way, which is basically mother's experiences after 56, 57, 58. So the wonderful part of this whole story is as it unfolds towards the transformation. She gives us so many wonderful hints, useful hints, even in everyday life. So though this is in the context of bodily transformation, so we should not forget it, but at the same time it is so useful even in everyday life. And I'll read two passages and then we'll continue further. Page 43, and she says something very interesting, because when we see evil, suffering, we wonder what is the cure. So this is because we separate, this is suffering, this is joy, this is evil, that is good. But if we go to the heart of things, we'll discover the cure there itself. They coexist. Actually, in material nature, it is so often found that in Ayurveda, for instance, one example which I remember is that there is a little plant which has like a hood, which is hood like cobra, and it is the area where cobras do come and nest. But this plant has the property to heal poison, treat poison. And there are many such examples in nature, and probably very intuitively Ayurveda developed around this understanding. So she says, one might say that the cure of any suffering coexists with the suffering. So, instead of seeing an evil useless and stupid, as it is generally thought to be, you see that the progress, the evolution which has made the suffering necessary, which is the cause of the suffering and the very reason for its existence, attains the intended result, and at the same time the suffering is cured for those who are able to open themselves and receive. So, very beautiful, this whole thing is a package. So first is when we see suffering and evil. So what has made the suffering come into being is when we look at the same phenomena some time back. It didn't lead to, things were there, but we never regarded them as evil. So it's so strange. If we go back even during the time of Mahabharata, the empress or the crown, or she is a queen, the queen is being disrobed publicly and people are still wondering whether it should be, is it right according to dharma or not dharma. Today, it creates a lot of suffering inside, that why is such an evil existing. So, human consciousness has evolved to a point where it begins to experience pain in things which did not give rise to pain. And if we go into its heart, say, for instance, we can take an example of even physical suffering. So if we go into the heart of physical suffering, if we don't, we are not satisfied just with surface explanations and understanding, then we'll see behind maybe an attitude, maybe a, of course, behind lifestyle there is an attitude, maybe an approach, maybe a mental stance we take because of which the physical body is impacted. And it is that which is causing the suffering. It is just reminding us that, look here, there is a problem within us. And because I am neglecting it, the suffering is thrown up. So that's why in today's time we use the word stress and suffering. So much of pain, of disorders of various kinds have come up. And if we look deep inside, why is it that with the coming of modern medicine, diseases have multiplied? Actually, with hospitals, diseases have multiplied. There is no doubt about it. If we look at it, the worldwide statistics. So why it has happened? Some people say because people have become more vigilant and they are diagnosing it. No, it's not like that. In times way back, there was the simplicity of the mind, which when it had a problem, it just opened, offered with faith, and it just changed within itself what needed to be changed, because people intuitively felt that, you know, I should probably change this within me. But now we have a whole formation of illness, the dangers, the risks, and that has created a lot of problem. Even every day I see. Today I saw a patient, not a patient, I mean a friend's sister who is also a devotee. Elderly lady. So she came, she said, this time I have come for the first time. Me and my sister. Actually I saw the two sisters come. So I said, Hari, you have come alone? She said, yes. I said, first time in your life? She said, yes, because they had never traveled alone. Always with husband or somebody else. So it was a very happy change. I said, very nice. I am glad you came. I mean, they come from a village in MP, smaller place, and they were also very happy. Then today she came with some chest pain. She said, I am having, then it disappears. So I said, okay, we'll get an ECG done. And when I looked at the, then she said, I am on this prescription. The prescription was, she is a confirmed case of heart disease and she is on prescription medication. So I said, you are very bold. You have traveled all the way without, with all these prescriptions and you know, you will handle it. So I asked her passingly that, look, I mean, how long you have been having this problem? Oh, 20, 25 years. I said, did you get yourself ever angiogram and all? Nah, nothing, I'm just taking this medicine and carry on. Time to time I have pain, I just take rest. As a doctor, I can't say that. So I said, okay, I am also giving you some medicine. Keep it with you in case you have pain, you eat, take it. Otherwise, basically rest and all this I advise. He said, yes, yes, I know. When I get it, I just take a little rest. And I have this medicine, I don't need, I don't take it. Now the beauty is there is such a simplicity of faith. There was no questioning, no argument, not even asking the, oh my God, is it really a heart attack? Do you want me to, check, get admitted? Nothing. So I was also confident. I said, all right, you take rest in your room. Only come to the samadhi or in your auto rickshaw and go back. And your sister can get you food from next door in cottage. She said, yes, yes. Not even a trace of fear. Her father, of course, was a very well-known Ayurvedic practitioner. So, she has grown up with this faith. Now, see, when we look inside, somewhere this faith has gone. It is very difficult to restore it. So, the moment there is illness, the mind begins to play upon it. Exaggerates, amplifies, and you can't help it because all around this is the suggestion. So this is one of the reasons. And of course there is lifestyle. Of course there is attitude which needs to change. So then she is also telling us. So what is to be done? To open and receive. These the three things. Suffering as a means of progress. Progress and the cure of suffering are coexistent. Simultaneously. So basically suffering is a reminder that something is not progressing. Physically, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, we have to detect it. So that's the part sincerity is required. And then to open and offer it. And here she says, if at the moment when the transforming action creates a suffering, there is in that which suffers the necessary aspiration and opening. The remedy also is taken in at the same time and the effect is total. Complete transformation with the action necessary to obtain it, and at the same time cure of the false sensation produced by the resistance, and the suffering is replaced by something which is not known upon this earth but which is akin to joy, well-being, trust and security. It is a super sensation in a perfect peace. Now this is the remedy she gives and I have seen it works. I have seen myself so many times. It works like magic. You are having things for a long time and suddenly they just collapse as if they were not existent. They vanish and they may last for a long time. That also she explains that why they last and with all her experiences. Oh, this is something very interesting. I must read on the way. 22nd August 1968. Very interesting. It's about a note written by the mother concerning an ordeal that threatened her physical body. So what had happened? What was it? So she writes a note. This she has not spoken about it, but this note was found and obviously she has agreed to put it here. The doctor advises not to get tired. What is it? the tires, only that which is useless. See, what a hint. Why we get tired. So now she is describing what is it that is tiring her. To see sincere people to whom it does good is not tiring. So she says, I can work the whole day meeting people who are fine, who are genuine, who seek, who are earnest. It doesn't tire. But those who come to weigh theories and practices, those who in their intelligence believe they are very superior and are capable of distinguishing the true from the false, who imagine that they can decide whether a teaching is true and whether a practice agrees with the supreme reality, those are indeed tiring, and to see them is useless, to say the least. She's very clear on that. And such people surrounded her in abundance. I mean, even now you see people have so much doubts, and but they would stay. So there is this. Now, of course, it's not a question of her getting tired. But then it is like a drag on the upward lift of the consciousness. So then she says something very strong. Let these beings of higher intelligence trot as they please on their way. Don't get into argument and discussion with them. Now here we see suddenly, you know, Maheshwari from that height, she is saying, let these beings of higher intelligence, there is a touch of humor, irony, trot as they please on their way, which will continue thousands of years. So beautifully she is saying. And that's why the mother said Sri Aurobindo was a perfect gentleman. And this was the reason. It was not about his British manners, no. Because he said they would write to him so many times with so many doubts, and yet he would keep on replying. That's why she said he is a perfect gentleman. And if you really see the letters, those so close to him, whom he loved and cared, and they would keep writing, and Sri Aurobindo will keep replying. And so much so that one of the persons to whom he has written maximum letters, or next to maximum, probably Dilip Kumar Roy, in one of them, he says, do you really think that by writing letters you can bring the supermind? Just imagine, he is the recipient. The recipient of the grace is saying, do you think this way you can? And Sri Aurobindo is explaining. He could have just said, you know what, you don't understand, just stay quiet. But he's explaining that, yes, I agree that writing letters does not, you know, but it has its own place and purpose and work. That's why it has been taken as an activity. There's a whole letter. He's explaining why he is writing letter to a disciple who is questioning his writing letter. I mean, so she said he is a perfect gentleman because he would keep on answering. People burdened him with so many useless things. Mother said that. And he would keep on, so much so he gave his own eyes, if you really look at it. In those days with that kerosene and later that electric bulb, he was, and he had to write with the pen. Later on, of course, there was the typewriter. And then she says, let these beings of higher intelligence trot as they please on their way, which will continue thousands of years, and leave simple people of goodwill, those who believe in the divine grace, to advance quietly on their path of light. Very beautiful this. That those who are simple, who believe in the divine grace, they are advancing on the path of light. So often people ask this question. I said, see, you know, all your life you want to stand on the sea and debate. Or you want to plunge in the sea, there are people, then they say, what does it mean? I say, there are people who have already plunged and have gone far ahead. You are missing the boat. Understand the urgency. Because at some point you have to plunge in the sea and go forward. So beautiful things as we see. For the body itself, it is quite evident. During, say, 1 hour or 2 or 3, it suffered much. It was quite miserable. Now she is talking all these experiences are in the body, because body has to come in contact with the supramental force, and it brings so many things. She has spoken about cells talking to each other, conversation. And she says it's an altogether physical suffering. And then, all of a sudden, all gone. The body apparently has remained the same in its appearance. But in place of an inner disorder which makes it suffer, everything is going well and there is a great peace, a great calm. And everything is going well. But this, it is for one body. How does it act upon others? From the moral point of view, that is to say, in respect to attitudes and characters and reactions, it is quite visible. Even from the physical point of view, sometimes, all of a sudden, something disappears. As we had the experience when Surabindo removed a pain. She describes that experience when somebody came with a lot of pain. And I'm having pain here. And Surabindo saw that there was a black little, like a worm, dancing here. And she saw actually a subtle hand of Surabindo go there, pluck it out and throw it far. And he suddenly says, oh, my pain is gone, my pain is gone. Now, everything is fine except the one thing, that if you tell it to the doctor, no, then you are in trouble. He will ensure that it comes back. Oh, this is chance. No, you don't understand. No, you don't know. No, this may happen. No, that may happen. No, 100 things. So often I say, because sometimes I see when a specialist comes, a big crowd of people, and sometimes they come in, because my office is right across, so they come and ask. So I say, Ari, what happened? No, we have come to show to the specialist. Whatever, bone or other. I said, yeah, I understand. I have a little bit smile on the face. So then they ask. I said, see, you have made specialist into God. And every doctor knows, whoever is sincere, that we really don't know much. They know a little bit. Nobody knows exactly what's happening. But we have catapulted them to the level of the God. Then I said, see, what will he do? He'll give you something for the pain, something like for the inflammation. Little bit he'll give you. And you have to take it. So you don't expect a cure. Doctors can relieve you. Cure means now they give a medicine, maybe for 10 days, 15 days, it never comes back. That's what is called a cure, technically. So 90% of the disease we cannot cure. That's a fact. You have to take medicine. So that means you are not curing, you are keeping it under check. And the diseases that get cured, the strange part is they anyways get cured. You know, cough, cold, dysentery, most fevers, most of them get cured. There is only 1% or 2% of illnesses where really this intervention helps. In an emergency, when you know, probably you take something, heart attack or something, you take it, because it's difficult that time. Though I know of instances where people have been fine, perhaps most instances they are fine. But during that time it helps. So that reminded me of something very funny that I saw today. You know, God's ways. Don't take God also for granted that I have prayed, so he must do this. So just today or yesterday, there was a Turkish minister. So he suddenly on the stage, he was saying that, Allah will punish all those who are not faithful. And next moment, he had a heart attack and collapsed. A real story, okay? And the whole thing was video shot. And so, when we turn to God, divine, we should say we surrender. What you want to do is your business. My task is to open and surrender. And that's what Mother says in one of her prayers of, I think, March 17, that whether the divine chooses to cure or chooses to take us away, it's fine. Then she says, this is the cure. This is the supreme science. So sometimes people ask this to me also. They said, you know, we should surrender. I said, see, it may work with me, but it may not work with you, because to me I'm fine to say hurrah, bye-bye, and you know, without a bye-bye, it's okay. It doesn't matter. If you are okay with it, try it. Otherwise, it's dangerous. Something will happen and you'll say that, look, you know, you said surrender to the divine grace, but see what happened from the other world, you are going to catch me. So, basically, surrender is so beautiful. So beautiful. Actually, it relieves all discomfort. I'm yours, the body is yours, do with it, and it should be genuine, earnest. It's not like, now I have said, so she will take care and I'll be cured. Yeah, you may be cured. Cured completely. Or, hippe burre, it's fine. Fine. So this surrender releases all the stress and strain from everywhere. Even the heart says, okay, I am in the hands of the Divine Mother. Okay, so I hope doctors don't hear or, you know. And she explains, the body feels imprisoned and suddenly it is released. So this is one of the things. And then she says, the body has absolutely wonderful moments. It has hours of agony and all of a sudden a wonderful moment. But that moment cannot be explained. If one is to judge the degree of growth by the proportion of time, well, the wonderful moment lasts a few minutes and there are hours of agony. There are even hours of suffering. And then if one judges the proportion accordingly, it is still very, very, very extremely far away. So this is in 1968, because from particularly 68 beginning, the penetration of the supramental forces on the body became more and more intense. So we have to understand that when we are staying in this zone, which is a very highly activated radiation zone, super radiation zone. So how much, that's why she would insist that, you know, the body must be given some exercise. Very interestingly, that this thought that body is changing has come in the world. There have been, probably AI picks up some podcast or some of these things wherein people are speaking of moving to higher dimension, even the physical body, the two-strand DNA is going to change into 12-strand DNA and carbon-based is going to change into crystal-based. Now, I am not saying whether it's modern scientific point of view provable or not provable. But the thought has come. And if the thought has come, it's the sign that something is active in the atmosphere. That much we can say. Whatever is seized by the human thought and imagination, be it the dream of flying, as we see in Da Vinci and then Pushpak Viman, one day you will realize it, because this is the way divine consciousness operates. It's not whether it's right now provable or not. Many things are there which come like that, and then subsequently they end up, people laugh at them and they end up realizing. So I was very surprised that actually the body is going to change and a new creation is going to, they are speaking. They are not openly, at least outwardly, they don't seem to be having anything of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. But they are speaking about it. That, you know, now things are being wrapped up. Now, in fact, very interestingly, this one of them spoke about the solar flare. That there is a solar flare and that storm is going to put radiation in the human body. And, you know, they would be changed. This is something which Sri Aurobindo was asked. Will the new body will be a radioactive material? And Sri Aurobindo didn't deny it. He didn't say anything in favor or against it. He said, let's see, because it's luminous, phosphorescent. Then when mother, once there was a solar flare, the mother describes it. She says there was a solar flare and she actually saw a little being like a child who is distributing that sprinkling golden powder like dust on the atmosphere. And then she speaks about the supramental substance. So behind the activity, there are forces. So if you take it that sun is the symbol of the supermind, then this burst that take place, what is their effect on the human body? We don't understand. It's a massive chunk of photons and that energy, solar energy, impacting the earth. So even this holes through which radiation is coming, radioactive material is coming to us, and many of the things which today we think are not good, we don't know what is part of the divine plan. So, all this she just touches upon. And then finally she comes to, which is what I thought we'll read today. So there are some very interesting steps in the supramental yoga. Till 56 we know, generally people know. Then 56, 29th February 1956, there is the manifestation of the supramental consciousness, which is different from descent. Descent is an individual phenomenon. Sri Aurobindo and the mother would experience it. Some other sadhaks probably were experiencing it. But it's individual because their consciousness has ascended to a point and they could receive the supramental light and consciousness. But what was it doing? It was meant to activate the supermind already hidden inside the earth. Because supermind is hidden in the earth. That is the power of determination. That is the cosmic order. If you want to put it, the law of truth, which is hidden. That's why things move the way they must move. Otherwise, there would be chaos. So it is the determinant, the omnipotence and omniscience of God, if you want to put it like that. Though the play gets modified as it enters the realm of ignorance. So it is the vidyamay maya, avidyamay maya. And beyond both is the supermind. So supermind pushes things. As it enters into ignorance, because the forces are not yet ready to receive rightly. And of course human beings are not ready, so it gets distorted. So we have evil and suffering and even falsehood in God's world. So this is the basic plan. But now there are beings who are getting ready more and more for direct action of the supermind beyond the realm of ignorance and knowledge. So this is one part. But as a result of these descents, and finally because the mother opens the door, because the supramental force comes running down, consciousness comes running down, even though many people are not aware, but now it's like a floodgate which she says got down into the inconscient because it was swallowed up. So what does it do? It suddenly bursts forth the supermind hidden inside matter. So the manifestation starts. It begins to manifest. Now it has become part of the earth principle. It has burst forth from below. So we have this story, not exactly the story, but this process is very interestingly described in the gift of the fourth Veda, Athar Veda. So in a previous life, one of the Asur has eaten up the Vedas and he is very happy. Now nobody will have the Veda. And he dies. Now it is, he has eaten something which is indestructible. So in next life, it bursts forth from him. And he starts expressing the Veda. He becomes an instrument. And so nobody believes that this can be Veda. He says, Vedas only three. You can't have a fourth Veda. So they all go to Shiva finally. And Shiva puts a stamp. No, no, this is genuine Veda. And this is the story. He was an Asur in previous life. And it has now burst forth and started expressing. I have several takes on this story. One of them is, even if we are the worst Asuras, I mean, not that we are, this is being taken in inside us. So what is going to happen? As we pass on to the other life, because as such the progressive movement is there in Sanatana Dharma, you are constantly progressing. So even Ashwatthama is supposed to become a Manu in one of, you know, in the next. So he also has hope. So all this we are taking in, not knowing, not realizing, or perhaps even undergoing some distortion inside us, is going to manifest as life changes over. Because it goes along with us as a nidhi. All the outer crust goes away. But this releases itself and expresses itself. So this is how, and I have solid experience to back it. Because I remember as a youngster, 21, 22, I used to write a lot. And suddenly I would write about the Superman. So I had not read about it. This I am just sharing that how the things can carry on. I had no idea about Mother and Sri Aurobindo. I had not read about any of those speaking of Superman. But in my letters to my fiancée, now my wife, I would write about Superman and all this. And she would think fortunately didn't think I am totally crazy. So, but this was my letter. Now I understand it is all because something that I must have read in the previous life and Sri Aurobindo's grace, it carried on. And now it manifests as a spontaneous knowledge. That's why I keep saying, read the life divine, read everything. Even if in one life we don't understand, this is going to express itself. And this I am saying on the basis of solid concrete experience. Because as a youngster, I don't know how I was writing long sentences, 10 lines. Later on, he said, "Arey, this looks like a passage from the life divine." I had no clue about life divine existing upon earth. The only way it can be explained, only way, because I have not practiced any yoga or I can't claim anything to what yogis do, far from being a renunciate. So, only thing is that it's the grace which takes it, the thread, and carries it to the next life. So, all this is going into the earth atmosphere, preparing us. And yes, many things may happen today, but whatever is not happening today, it's still going and working. One in the general earth atmosphere and is embedded now in our soul. This too she describes later, how the psychic being and the supermind expresses itself, but that let's keep it for as a suspense for later. But in 62, another event takes place because she knew that supermind can break down bodies and this thing. When it's emerging, it's sun. You see what happened when, what was the name? Sangya married sun. So she was very scared. And she gets very scared. She says, how can I marry somebody with so much of light and intensity and heat and force? So she presents a shadow form, Chaya. So what comes out of that Chaya is Yama. A very interesting story. That Sangya and Surya, when they marry. So she cannot bear that heat and intensity. So that ignorance is a symbolic story. Need not go into it. She brings forward Chaya. So Yama comes out, who is the guardian of the realms of, you know, he is also guarding the dharma, but in the lower realms. And then of course Shani comes, the god of justice is born out of that. Because justice must come first before the reign of truth. We want everything to be good, happy, hunky-dory. But there is a lot of, earth has seen so much of injustice, pain, suffering. And the era of justice will come before the era of truth. Because all these are, and we may not understand that time. We may say, oh, something was done 1,000 years back or 100 years back. No. All this has to be cleansed from the human consciousness, which is what we see today. So all this she described, but then comes on January 1969, 1st January, she experiences the descent of a new consciousness. And she says that when she was saying, "Bon Ane" to everybody, she felt that, I'll read the experience, and it's very interesting because the emergence of man is often called as the descent of man. It's very fascinating why this word has been used. Ideally, it should be ascent out of the animal. But it is true that it's a descent of the highest point of mental consciousness. And that's how we already know about it. Manu is the mental consciousness descending into bodies which are ready. And that's how the human comes into existence. So the mother speaks of descent of Superman. And she describes it beautifully. 1st January 1969. In the night, it came slowly. And on waking up this morning, there was as though a golden dawn. And the atmosphere was so light. The body felt, well, it is truly, truly new. A golden light, transparent and benevolent. Benevolent in the sense of a certainty, a harmonious certainty. It was new. And when I say Bon Ane to people, it is this which I pass on to them. And this morning, I have passed my time like this, spontaneously saying Bon Ane, Bon Ane. So it was this new consciousness which was expressing itself. Then, for 14 months, this whole experience goes on. So she studies this consciousness like a scientist. So she is wondering, what is this new consciousness? She doesn't identify on 1st January as the Superman consciousness. But she knows there is a new consciousness which has the stature of a god. Then on 4th January, she says, what this consciousness is and the being who came. He says, she says, oh, very, very gentle, very smiling, very benevolent. This is the nature of that being who has come. I do not know what it is. She's saying, like a scientist, I don't know what to call it. Is it supramental being or is it something else? Look at the precision of the mother. She will wait till she is certain. Then she says, but it is a kind of benevolence, therefore it was something very close to the human. And it was so concrete, as though it had a savor, so concrete it was. And then she says, I spoke to two or three persons about it, all had felt it. It was the beginning of the year. As if someone having the dimensions of a god. Now she gives another hint. Benevolent, smiling, dimensions of a god. That is to say, someone came to say Bonane with all the power to make it a Bonane. It was like this. And again she says, there is a note, a constant note of benevolence. A smile, yes, a benevolent smile. And all that with a great force. So this is the powerful benevolence she describes elsewhere, that it is not a weak benevolence. So she would explain immediately after. First she says, is it the supramental personality? That will incarnate itself in all those who have a supramental body. She herself says, no, it is not yet the supramental personality. That will come after a couple of years. So she says, it's not the supramental. She raises the question and she answers, no. Supramental personality will come when the body is transformed. This is in an untransformed human body. Again she describes, it was luminous, smiling, and so benevolent through powerfulness. This is important. It's the benevolence of somebody who knows. It's like Shiva is smiling when Ravan is trying to lift Kailash. He says, I know it. You can't do anything. So that smile of benevolence and full of force. Generally, so she says, generally in the human being, benevolence is something a little weak. In this sense that it does not like battle. It does not like fight. So that's benevolent. Okay, I let you go. I forgive you. It's okay. Oh, fight is bad. Battle is bad. One should not. Nothing, but this is nothing of the kind. A benevolence that imposes itself. Mother brings her fist down upon the arms of a chair. It has interested me because it is altogether new and so concrete. Concrete like this, mother touches the arms of a chair, like what the physical consciousness usually considers as others, concrete like that. It's something not just a feeling, not just a mental thought, certainly not an imagination, but you could touch it. It's palpable. That is how her experience is. That is to say, it did not pass through an inner being. Through the psychic being, it came directly upon the body. And since then, there is the certitude. So, the disciple asks, is it something that will suffuse the bodies that are ready? So it's active since then. The beauty is it's a mentor. See how she planned everything for us. So people often say that what about guru, living guru, all that. Apart from the fact that she is present and if you can contact her through self-giving or whatever means, aspiration, then nothing is required. But Superman consciousness is a mentor consciousness. So when it begins to work upon the body will find the way to transmute itself. That's what she has said. The body itself will figure out, and we can see how so many things are happening in the human body, and you know, so many kinds of even thoughts are coming about, you know, from sun gazing to food, and so many changes which is going to help the human body ultimately figure out a way to transmute itself. I can just share one of my discoveries. I feel the way is walking in the sun. My way. One of the ways. Is probably. There must be many ways. I don't know whether it will work on somebody or not. But it will find a way. And see, sun is so much in plenty here. And mother has just given one hint. When people complained, oh, it is so hot here in Pondicherry. And she just passingly commented, make friend with the sun. Make friends with the sun. It's not just a passing statement. So people often ask, somebody asks, how to make friends with the sun? I said, you make friends with somebody who is living. Start dealing with sun as a living being. And then you can make friends. Relate with it. Talk to the sun. Don't act like Sangya running away. He's trying to do good. He's, after all this earth is part of his creation. If the sun were not, we would not be. So he's actually in that sense Pita. And the radiance is like Mata. Actually, nothing would be. So say thank you at least to the sun. Thank you so much. You are so kind. It will start connecting. Every element of creation one can connect. I have seen one can connect with the rivers. This is something which is very spontaneous. One can connect with the sea. One can connect with the mountains. And of course, one can connect with the sun. One connects with the moon. So many poets connect with the moon. So they are not inanimate objects, because we keep reading sun is a, what is that, orange ball of fire. But it's a living conscious being. And that's why in India we had even the prayers to the sun. And everybody knew it's a physical thing, but they also knew that behind every physical there is a divine truth and a divine being. So you can connect the divine with the divine being. So the devotee asks, is it something that will suffuse the bodies that are ready? Mother says, yes. I have the feeling that it is the formation which is going to enter, going to express itself, to enter and express itself in the bodies. That will be the bodies of the supramental. So it is this formation which will enter and take them. Then she says, or perhaps the superman, the intermediary between the two. Now this is the conversation on 4th January, where she identifies. She says, oh, this is the superman. So it is intermediary in the sense that there will be the human side and the changed consciousness. So human being in a changed higher consciousness, the superman consciousness, a vast, benevolent, compassionate, smiling, luminous. That is the superman. And she describes it very beautifully. She says, perhaps the superman, it was very human, but a human in divine proportions, I must say. This is the divine humanity, or the godlike humanity, before the divine humanity comes. A human without weaknesses and without shadows. It was all light and smiling. Now she adds one more quality. Luminous, benevolence, vast, smiling, and she adds one more quality. Sweetness at the same time. So all the... She is describing one by one all the qualities. Yes, perhaps the superman. And then on 8th January, she puts his final seal. Yes, it is that. It is the descent of the superman consciousness. I had the assurance later on. So with clarity, no confusion, the superman consciousness. It was the 1st of January after midnight. Now she's going back to the experience and describing it. I woke up at 2 in the morning, surrounded by a consciousness so concrete and new in the sense that I had never felt it before. And it lasted, absolutely concrete, present, for 2 or 3 hours, and afterwards it spread out and went about to find people who could receive it. That's why when Nalinidha was asked, I think it was 70s or early 80s, he says, the Superman could be next door to you. Now from 69, 50 years, 55 years, whoever is ready, it is finding, it is picking them up and starts working in them. It's activating. We may say activation of the divine plan. The Superman comes and starts, and it starts giving a new certitude to the body, and it's in the body it acts. And I knew that it was the consciousness of the Superman, that is to say, the intermediary between man and the supramental being. And Shubhendu has described all this in aphorisms, thoughts and aphorisms. He says, who is the Superman? So we have the idea of an aggrandized Superman. Very miraculous powers who will do all kinds of things, whom people will be afraid. The Nietzschean idea of a titanic Superman. And it's in Savitri cautions, don't take that stare, O human being. Because you will collapse and stumble. Asuras have tried to become Superman in this way. So they all, Superman in that, is used in a generic sense there, that beyond man, something more than man. But it's not just beyond man, there have been Asuras beyond man, very powerful, before whom human beings were like, they could crush in the hands. It's not that. So the title, we should not be mistaken. It is not beyond man consciousness alone. There are those who have gone beyond, geniuses, certain yogis, saints. But it's something else. And that's where the mystery lies. It's a new consciousness which has been sent as a gift of the grace to act as an intermediary between the human and the supramental. And once again, its quality is wideness, benevolence. Elsewhere also she has said, I'm combining all of them. Benevolence, luminous, smiling, compassion. This also she describes later. And sweetness. And all stemming from a position of power, not from a position of weakness. So all this, he says, that is to say, the intermediary between man and the supramental being. This is also active, not only the supramental manifestation. It is active since 1969 and is in search of bodies wherever they are ready. It is taking hold and so mighty. It will make sure you end up doing what it wants you to do. It's not going through the mind that, you know, thinking, deciding, picks up people and brings them. That has given to the body a kind of assurance and confidence. That experience has, as it were, stabilized the body. And if it keeps the true attitude, every support is there to help it. And then she says finally, on 18th January 1969. So somebody comes to visit her and she experienced the atmosphere. That atmosphere is thick, luminous, and then it was forceful. To me it was visible, it was very material, as though a rampart, nearly of this thickness, and it remained there all the time he was there. So you see, she is not just talking of, this experience come. For her, things are very, very concrete. She's like a super scientist. If you read through Mother's writings and Sri Aurobindo's writings, what strikes us is that they have said things consistent with this age. Not just that, I had this experience, I'm sure this is going to happen, this is my prophecy. How minutely she is describing. Then she described, so it was consciously active. There is within it a consciousness, a very precious thing, which gives lessons to the body, teaching it what it must do, that is to say, the attitude it must have. She's talking about the Superman consciousness here. It's spontaneously telling the body what is to be done. This idea has come now. People are actually trying out things like listen to your body and tune in to the deeper consciousness. This idea has come afloat. Before this, it was like body is just a log of wood. But this idea... the reaction it must have. I have already told you many a time that it is very difficult to find the process of transformation when there is no one to give you any indication. Well, it was as though the reply, it came to tell the body, take this attitude, do this in this way, do that in that way, and so the body is satisfied, it is completely reassured, it can no longer be mistaken. Now see, mother is in the position of a pioneer and she has to identify with the body completely because this is something never been done. She is the supreme divine, but it has to be worked out every step, all the way. It's the same thing. Ram is God. But that doesn't mean that he comes, stand before Ravan and says, don't you know I am Narayan, and does Sudarshan Chakra and finishes. There are conditions of earth through which it has to happen. Otherwise, it will make no meaning. There would be no Ram Rajya, no legacy. Nobody would... Ram will come, do a miracle and go away. They will all worship. Ah, hail Rama. That's not what he wants. He has come to change the consciousness. So the Vanara and the common folks, everybody has to rally around him. And in them, his influence has to percolate. Same thing with Krishna. So she has to work it out into the body. It came as a mentor. It was practical, quite practical. This thing must be rejected. That must be accepted. This must be made general. That all the inner movements, and it even becomes very material in the sense that it says with regard to the to some vibrations, this you must encourage. It's bypassing all the notions, moral, ethical, mental, intellectual, all of them. To others, that must be canalized. To channelize it in this way. To others again, this must be removed. Little indications like that. She says that, you know, it continues and never had the body been so happy. There was the complete presence, absolute freedom and a certitude that had no importance. These cells, other cells, it was life everywhere, consciousness everywhere, absolutely wonderful. So all this now, the changes she is experiencing. And then something very interesting. It is something very strange. All the, now this, how does the divine look at us? How does this new consciousness looks upon humanity? This is also important because now she is seeing it through that and telling us. So somebody asked Sri Aurobindo once, how do you look at human beings when they quarrel, when they do this, like that? Sri Aurobindo said, like man looks on cats and dogs. Sometimes she has even laughed and made remarks, oh, there they are breeding like cats and dogs. She laughed. She's not like, oh, they are so horrible people and this, that, nothing. Because it's benevolent. Just the opposite of critical and, you know, condemning. No, nothing. It's a very vast, luminous, smiling, peaceful, with the certitude that this is going to be. So, at one point, it's very interesting. Shobindo describes the sexual relation between a male cat and a female cat. And he says, this particular cat, female cat, with this male cat is purely physical. With the other male cat, there is a bit of emotional attachment. With the other female male cat, it is psychic. Just imagine. What is he doing, seeing? Can we even imagine all this? So then from that concept, this evening talks, it's so surprising what all he must be seeing. And if we were to speak out all that, probably we will be completely taken aback. So she says, all the defects of man appear as, all the qualities and all the defects of man appear as childishness, foolishness. She says all qualities as well as defects. It is curious. And it is not a thought, it is a concrete sensation. It is like a substance without life, human life she is describing. All ordinary things are like a substance lacking life. The true life, artificial and false. It is strange. This is how she looks at human life. All the qualities, oh, I am this, I am so good, oh, this person is so bad, horrible. That's not how the divine looks. We don't know how the divine looks. And she says that consciousness is formidably strong, powerful, in a peace, so smiling that it cannot be annoyed. It is absolutely impossible. So smiling and watching. And people say, mother will be angry. At one place he says, my child, I am not capable of getting angry. What is the divine not capable of? I have an answer of getting angry. That's the kind of greatness and mightiness. That's why in reference to this consciousness, he says, there will be an attempt to create a new religion around Sri Aurobindo. And it will be, they will try to make it cruel. Sri Aurobindo says that if you don't do this, you should be punished and castigated. And then she says, all must know that this is the asura who has taken the form of Sri Aurobindo. That Sri Aurobindo is great and mighty and benevolent and compassionate. Full of compassion. The special character of this new consciousness is no half measures, no approximations. That is its character. The idea, oh yes, we shall do it, and little by little, no, no, not like that. It is yes or no. Either you can or you cannot. So it pushes mankind, presses upon mankind. Don't hesitate. Take the leap. And then she says, truly, it is a grace, you see, as if not to lose time, not to lose time. It must be done. I have seen it, it's working. It can sometimes make you feel so impatient. Now, these lines are very thin. One has to be very patient. But this urge that this is the thing worth doing, it brings that state that all other things are truly speaking a waste of time. Everything else that we are thinking, we are doing this method, that technique, that process, all this is a waste of time. We are calculating what's happening here, what's happening there. This is the only thing, and actually if we see even logically, what is going to save mankind? Even today, this was the whole conversation we were taking place. I said, you can show doctors and see doctors for another 100,000 years. But the only real solution is the body must change. Is there any other lasting solution? Man must change. Human consciousness must change. That's what she says. That Sri Aurobindo wanted just 100 people who can become pure gold. And she says it is evident that humanity has not reached that point. She uses the word spiritualization. Not even supramentalization. It is enough if few human beings consent to be spiritualized. And then mother says, and I add, time presses from the human point of view. So it just puts that inner state that it should be done. It is the only thing worth doing it. I mean, all other things fade into the background. They are there, it's not that. But they are in the background. But this tremendous power, it is that above all. And it is with a compassion, a gentleness. It's not, is pushing you, chalo na, come, arre come, little nudge, come. Then it take a leap. Ah, I could. Now, come. It's like that. It doesn't condemn. It doesn't do any of these things. But keeps pushing us towards that glory which man has to embody. No, there are no words. We have no words to describe that. Something. Nothing but just to be attentive, and it is blissfulness. Nothing but just to turn one's attention towards that side. Immediately there is the bliss. What side? I have seen sometimes, quite often, that whenever there is something which, you know, you feel some kind of torment, just look at her. That side. Look into her eyes, her smile. What is there to worry about? What an assurance. Shobindu sitting majestically. What a tremendous assurance his presence is. And I understand, we have heard of people who in the midst of torture enjoyed bliss. It is like that, a beatitude. So there have been human beings where it has come like a promise and gone. Now it's active on earth. These are the true pioneers who have gone way before us. If you look at the life of many of these great saints, some of them, how they have gone through all this. So even Shurbindo himself, when fracture is there, and he says, I was trying to see how physical pain can be transformed into ananda. And then he adds, I almost succeeded. This is the whole process. Because nothing else matters ultimately. Everything can be used for this progress. A beatitude. There you are. It is that. Mother hands out a white hibiscus which she has named Grace. This is all 69. How much more things would have advanced. So, when we read all this, we just think that playing with the thoughts and words and intellectualizing things and doubting and this, that. What a waste of time when you can really move at a jet speed. Jema.